Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. The election of 2016 is a bust. The two worst candidates, no coverage of issues, threatens to be the dirtiest election in years. And all I can think of is now what? Back to the drawing board in podcast 539 as we wait for a lunar eclipse out here on the deck. Well, we are getting close to state fair time in Minnesota, and state fair time usually means a change in the climate. And I got to tell you, I can kind of feel it. The last few days, I just noticed it feels less humid. It seems like it's starting to dry out, and we're hitting that pivot point in the climate change that we call the arrival of fall into winter. And like they say on the TV show, winter is coming. And I know I just finished watching the latest Game of Thrones, and of course at the end they say winter is here, right? And I was talking to Greg Ryan about this, and I was saying, hey, should we be talking about air conditioning? And he was like, yeah, forget about that, because winter's coming and people should be aware. This is the time to have Ryan Plumbing come out and take a look at your heating system, because you want it to work when you need it, and you're not going to be turning it on until it gets cold. And if you haven't had it checked, then you don't know what the situation is. And while they're there, ask them about installing energy-efficient, high-capacity, whatever it's called, heating, because it's expensive. I'm going to tell you that, but it will save the money that you spend to put it in 3 or 4 years. So having a more efficient heating system is certainly something to look into. And of course, for emergency service, Ryan Plumbing and Heating is still around, and they're still great. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro-wide, from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too. For four generations, they've been doing quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, they are on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. So for emergency service and for getting your heating checked before it gets cold, because winter is coming, I hate to say it. Yeah, we got to go through fall, but it's going to be short. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4777. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, or check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Doesn't matter where you are. If you're in Minneapolis or St. Paul or the suburbs, Plymouth or West St. Paul, they can get a plumber near you. So check them out, Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. Well, I promised an announcement about streaming, and I do have an announcement about streaming. We now have streaming on the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. When you hit the page, if you're hitting it on a desktop or a Power Mac or something like that, it'll start streaming audio from the last three podcasts. And those three podcasts load and play automatically when you hit the page. If you want to stop it, all you have to do is hit the pause button on the player and you'll stop it. And as I said, it plays the most recent three podcasts. And of course, if you're listening to it on an iPhone or I would assume an Android device, the streaming doesn't kick in. You have to hit play on the player, which is usually on the iPhone. It appears on the bottom because the page is optimized for portable devices. So if it's an iPad or an iPhone or a Galaxy 5 or 7 or whatever, you'll have to initiate the streaming. And let me know how that goes. There will be more developments with this later. The streaming service that I'm using will eventually allow us to do things like create playlists and so forth. But it's kind of cool because now the page actually has something going. You can listen live if you want to. So follow the links. Also, right underneath the Listen Live button or the Broadcast Live button is the sign-up form for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter, which I'm now calling the Bob Line. And I wanted to get one out in August. I don't know if I'm going to be able to. I'm just going to have to force myself to sit down and start doing some writing, and I will eventually start working on that. But I can't just send people the newsletter who email me. They have to sign up through MailChimp so that your system doesn't think that it is spam. So you have to sign up and subscribe to the Bob Line. definitely the peak of summer out here. The bugs are going crazy, and I love that. And I love that sort of sound, especially late at night. And it's a full moon, and so it's a perfect time to do this podcast, because this is not an easy podcast for me to do for a lot of reasons. I certainly cut my teeth on conservative talk radio. I have been in conservative circles in this state for many years, and I've spoken to a lot of you who are listening. And I find this election deeply distasteful, as many people know. I think it's probably the worst election in maybe 100 years in this country, at a time when, you'd have to consider it pivotal, a pivotal time for this country and the world. We, the people of the United States, have nominated, and I put that in quotes, the two worst possible candidates. And I've said this a couple of times. I don't mean to be repetitive, but I think it's something that needs to be repeated and said over and over again, that these two candidates who are so terrible are I guess I should ask this as a question. Are they a reflection of the two mainline parties? Well, that's something that only listeners can determine. On January 20th, 2017, one of them, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, is going to be inaugurated president. He or she will have a majority or minority in the U.S. Senate and U.S. Congress, depending on the outcome of the general election as it impacts on the, 435 congressional races and the one-third of the races in the Senate. And if there's any gubernatorial elections, ballot initiatives and so forth in the 50 states. So I took a look at the polls today because I told you I was simply going to ignore those until we got close to the election. And notwithstanding the statements that say basically this is still the preseason, people don't start paying attention until after Labor Day. First it was they don't start paying attention until after the conventions, and now it's they don't start paying attention until after Labor Day. But so far, basically, and I'm gonna address the polling situation here a little bit. The average is that Trump is running about 6 points behind Clinton, which is not a good sign. It has been my experience that if Republicans expect to win a close election, polling should show them ahead well past the margin of error, pretty far out. Trump supporters say that his support overall is not going to show up in the polls. Well, maybe so and maybe not. And what they're saying is they're pointing to the Brexit vote as an example that we're in a new reality when it comes to polling and elections. And, I'm not going to say that we aren't, but the polling for Brexit just simply showed that it was going to be a close vote, not conclusive for either the win side, not for either the stay side or the win side. It was the analysts that took the data to mean that it was going to be a victory for stay. Now, certainly the same thing could happen in the United States general election. An advantage in votes undetected by all polls would be unusual. The other thing is that events could take a course that might benefit Trump, and that's, something that we can't predict. But the other part of this is that the U.S. election is a state-by-state election. The Electoral College elects the president. So then you break it down by state, and I advise people to do this by going to realclearpolitics.com and looking at the electoral map. Clinton has sizable leads in Pennsylvania, New York, California, and even Virginia, something like an 11-point lead. But it is a little closer in states like Missouri and Nevada. But if he doesn't win Iowa, and if he doesn't win Virginia, and he struggles in Florida and places like that, his lead in Texas and the Mid-South and the good margins that he has over Clinton in Missouri, for example, are not going to be enough to get an electoral victory. Now, again, you will have to watch, as I will, the electoral map, and I would advise this rather than the general election polls as we get closer to Election Day, because it's all about those state-by-state polls. And I will do more stuff to explain to you the validity or the value of the state-by-state polls, but you have to be careful with the state-by-state polls. How they're done, who does them, and all of that, because we don't know. We have to look closer at the polls in the states to get a judgment of how a particular candidate's going to be doing in a particular state. This is the only hope at this point that Trump has, because when you look at the overall vote, the Clinton campaign is well ahead of the Trump campaign. Let me take a sip of coffee here. So if Trump wins, it's going to be the dissolution of the Republican Party as we have known it. If Trump loses, there's a chance the party might reform around some new ideas. A tiny chance. Why do I say this? I say it because Donald Trump does not represent the traditional Republican coalition of internationalists, strong on defense realists, supply-side economy advocates, and the so-called religious evangelists, this sort of three-legged stool that has been a factor with Republican politics since the Reagan era. Trump is a grab bag of policy ideas and initiatives that do not mix, like tax cuts for individuals and corporations combined with infrastructure spending to stimulate the economy and trade protection. People say to me, why don't you criticize Hillary Clinton? And my response to that is to ask how Clinton's policy ideas differ substantially from Trump's when it comes to economics. And the other argument is, well, if you're not going to vote for Trump, or if you're going to argue against Trump, which, by the way, I'm not arguing against Trump so much as I'm saying let's be coldly realistic about what Trump is. A vote against Trump is a vote for Clinton. Do you want her to win? Or on the left, it's do you want Trump to win? If the people who are for Bernie Sanders are unhappy with their choice of Hillary Clinton. So it's the lesser of two evils argument. But if both options are evil, why vote for either? So this brings me to the reason that this is a difficult podcast for me to do. First of all, I don't like being repetitive, but I find myself basically ending up on the same shore every time I go out to sea in the political ocean. And it ends up being repetitive. And I apologize in advance for being repetitive, but the best way for me to talk about that is to talk about what's wrong with our political system and what is wrong with the United States, and that means the voters of the United States and the government of the United States right now. We keep selecting candidates, and not just for president, that we're ultimately unhappy with. And I think the same will be true with Donald Trump if he wins. I think the people that will be most unhappy with him will be Republicans, because I think they're going to be shocked at what he actually is. I think there are entire groups of voters that are operating on a self-identity that doesn't exist anymore. It hasn't existed for a number of years. I've asked people for a number of years now, what is a conservative? And very few people can give me a cogent answer. Then I will say, well, what is a Republican? And they cannot give me an answer. And I've asked, what does a Republican Party stand for? And they cannot give me an answer. And among those same people, you say, well, what is a liberal? And they can't give you an answer. And what is a Democrat? And they struggle to give you an answer. They'll tell you it's a socialist. They'll tell you, I mean, it's people don't have language. They don't study. They don't know. Now, does this mean everybody is like this? No. But it means that, for the most part, the people that I've talked to really struggle when it comes to substance. And I don't even know if it's their fault. And I've talked about it a lot, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but it needs to be repeated. Basically, don't answer those questions. Don't ask, when I say what's a conservative, resist the temptation in your mind to answer the question. Let it set. Because quick answers equal a rote response. And we have been taught over and over again this rote response, that Republicans believe the following things, or conservatives believe the following things. But what do we stand for? And don't answer that question. Just think about it. How do our values translate to the real world? And by the real world, I mean politics. How do our values differ from the values of other people who may think different politically, or do they? And I would say don't answer those questions, because I don't think those questions are answerable right now. Those are things that people really, really have to think about. And as a political party, the Republicans or the Democrats really haven't even begun to answer those questions, because they feel that they don't have to, because when you say Republican, you're supposed to know what that means. Well, nobody knows. When you say Democrat, you're supposed to know what that means. Well, nobody knows. And that is why we have Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton as presidential candidates. And that is how we have shadowy operators and wealthy people like George Soros and the Koch brothers and Google and the unions manipulating our political process. So then what's next? You know, what's the answer in all this? it's clear that it isn't the Tea Party. The Tea Party never matured to be the kind of organization that was going to build political power. It certainly isn't Black Lives Matter. It certainly isn't running away to the redoubt somewhere in the Western United States, because wherever you are, there you are. It doesn't matter where you go. So the standard answers aren't the answers if you're trying to figure out what comes next. And what I want to do now isn't so much cover the election as it's talk about what comes next. So we're going to talk about that. Now, if you're in business for yourself, I'm sure you know that one of the biggest challenges if you're trying to grow your business is to show how much you appreciate your clients. And I know, because in being in small business, you really depend on your clients and you want to take care of them and you want them to know how much you appreciate what they do for you by helping them. But as the business grows, you might think about saying, hey, let's get the clients together and do an appreciation thing. And most of the time that takes the form of a lunch or dinner or a fishing trip or something like that, or you can send promotional items with your company name on it. A lot of times in Minnesota, people will do the Minnesota Classic, which is a boat trip on the lake. Or you can try something new that is different, social, and memorable, where you will socialize and bond with your clients who are doing something unique and fun at Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. If you click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, it takes you to their page. They've got video on there that shows what goes on. Brush Studio events, of course, are held in a relaxed social setting. They are event planning ninjas. What is it? Well, an artist guides the people who come in through a featured painting step by step. You do not have to have experience painting. Clients will be amazed at what they're able to do. It's not paint by numbers. You actually paint a painting. And people will take those things home and hang them in their living rooms. They will hang them in their offices, and they will never forget you for taking them to this fun event. So at Brush Studio in the West End, they have room for 55 people, plus catering from Crave, which is super cool. There's plenty of parking in the West End. It's easy to find. Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer and an extensive wine collection. Again, it's a fun, sophisticated way to create a new bonding experience for your clients that they will never forget, and they will love you for it, because you're going to be able to get around and get to know them all and talk to them and hang out with them while they're doing this. Here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, or visit brushstudio.net. You can reach out to them at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700, Brush Studio. So what comes next? What's the problem, Bob Davis? You know, why can't you just stop raining on the parade? Why can't you just support Donald Trump? He's the nominee. Why can't you bleed Republican? Who cares who, if you don't like a particular candidate, why can't you just bleed Republican? And bleed red, as they say. Why can't you just support the quote-unquote endorsed candidates and so forth? What's the problem? Well, the problem is that none of these candidates stand for the kinds of things that I think we need if we're going to go forward in the world, and if we're going to have the kind of world that we could have, given the opportunities and given the technology and given what is coming, as I have talked about in other podcasts. What's the problem? Well, I believe that the first problem is the voters. The people are the problem. Specifically, the opposition, which is the so-called conservatives, are the problem, which is why I don't criticize Democrats too much, because I believe the Democrats are beyond redemption. The so-called conservatives are looking for an answer, and they're supposed to be serving the Republican Party is essentially supposed to be serving the purpose of being the opposition, and they have continually failed in that role over and over again. They have failed to stand up for cutting budgets. They have failed to stand up for overreaches by the president. They have failed to do beyond some hearings and things of that nature in Congress. They have failed to carry the fight to the highest levels. This is the reason so many people who are on the right are upset, because they feel that the president has overreached constitutionally. They feel the government is spending too much money. Our debt is 140% of the GDP. And they are looking for a plan for the future. And Donald Trump does not have that plan. His plan for the future is Paul Ryan's tax plan and to spend more money on stimulating the economy through infrastructure, which is the Democrat plan, right? So it's unclear what the plan is. And in past elections, there was a clear difference in the approach. Why are we the problem then? Why, Bob Davis, are the voters? Why would you blame the voters? Well, I think it's this. It's simple. Since the trauma of the Great Depression back in the 1930s, but I think really since the first Roosevelt administration, this country has had a tendency to believe in the cause of government to address the great problems of society. With Roosevelt, it was the trust busting, and it was, the trust busting thing, which actually left J.D. Rockefeller richer than he would have been had the trust not been broken. And the idea that progressivism as a concept of government started with Roosevelt and started with the Republicans, and it continued with Wilson. And it became national policy during the Depression and the administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But let's not forget that Herbert Hoover, a Republican, was also known as a technocrat. He was a great egalitarian and ran what today would be considered an NGO before he became president. So from Hoover on, the idea that government intervention can make people's lives better has been our country's policy and differed greatly from the, Calvin Coolidge, Hayes, etc., approach to government, which was the smallest government possible is the best government and the lowest taxes possible are the best government. And the progressive years brought us things like the income tax and so on. It has been the basis of social and economic policy in this country for over 70 years. It's the reason people will often say from the von Mises school that the United States has been socialist since the 1930s. It's a slight overreach, I guess you could say, rhetorically speaking. But these ideas of collectivism and government stepping in and helping people and binding up the wounds and solving problems has been a part of our national psyche for a long time, almost 100 years. It certainly has been the basis of our foreign policy in many forms since 1945. When you go look at the monuments overseas, you will see this great purpose cut into marble about how the United States, the basis of the U.S. intervention in World War II was to allow people to be free to determine their own futures. So we have always believed, and the people have believed for a long time, that intervention by government in our own country and in the case of individuals and across the world is a good policy. And, maybe it is. I'm not going to say it isn't in this podcast because I think it's one of those things that you have to talk about for a long time, and you have to really understand economic history, and you have to understand U.S. history, and you have to really understand U.S. history post, roughly the 1830s. So it's really the U.S. history from about 1835 post-Jackson on through the early 1900s. So the American people really don't know any other kind of economics. We have been taught that capitalism triumphed over communism in World War. We triumphed over fascism and then communism under Reagan. But remember, who coined the term capitalism? It was a communist. It was Karl Marx, a Marxist, who coined the term capitalism. Does that mean the United States is socialist like Denmark or Norway? Well, I don't think it does, but I'll let you answer the question. Some people believe that it is. What we have in the U.S. is a controlled market economy. Communist countries are characterized by the ownership of the means of production by the state, North Korea, the Soviet Union. How do those two conditions differ in terms of classic economic theory? And you can answer that question as well. Would you say that you think today the United States is best described as a descendant of the economic philosophy of Adam Smith or Karl Marx? Not from 1776 to 1876, but from 1945 to 2016. So I think we have to start over at the bedrock that answers the question, who are we as a people? And it's not a question that you should answer in a knee-jerk way. It's a question for you to meditate on and think about as an American. Who are we as a people? What do we believe as a people? What kinds of citizens are we as a people? And what kind of country is this? What is it that we want? Because these are not questions that we ruminated on prior to the primary season. And this is not; these are not the kinds of philosophical questions that we ruminated on when we were listening to 17 candidates debate. And these are not the kinds of questions that we ruminated on when Bernie Sanders was fighting Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz was working her magic, so to speak, behind the scenes to make sure that the Democrats nominated the establishment candidate. And then we witnessed this incredible marriage of the establishment with really somebody who doesn't reflect even the history of the Republican Party. Now, could Donald Trump be a great president? Yeah, I'm sure he could if he gets there. But I'm also sure that he could be a chaotic, terrible president with no support from his own party in Congress. So we're entering a very dangerous phase in our history at this point, I believe. And it's funny because somebody posted, and I'm going to post this comment. Somebody said, it was Greg, said, you know, you've been saying that something was going to happen since I think when you watched The Gathering, whatever it was, The Gathering Storm, the movie about the guy that said that a tornado was coming that was going to destroy everything, and he built the, you know, and then it finally happens, right? I forgot what it's called. And I had to laugh because, I mean, I'm always predicting some catastrophic thing, but I really do think that we're reaching an historical pivot point in the future of our country. So once we can answer those questions, we have to go about the task of putting meat on those bones philosophically and then specifically as it pertains to policy. And I don't mean just we're going to send all the Mexicans home, but specifically how we're going to do that if that's what we decide we need to do. You know, what the policy elements of that are going to be. You know, what Trump likes to call his foreign policy realism. But I mean, there is a foreign policy school called realism. There is no such foreign policy school called foreign policy realism. And as I've said on other podcasts, you know, foreign policy doesn't come out of a can. It's like law. It is built on the shoulders of the previous thing. And there's a lot of things in this country that are built on the shoulders of the previous advancement. So what we have to do is go back to the blocks as people on the right, if you will. I believe we're actually on the left. I don't believe that we're on the right. But we need to go, and this is why terminology is so dangerous, because if you put yourself on the right, you're really denying what a true libertarian is or what a true market liberal and what a true social liberal is. Because if you believe in liberty and if you believe in unfettered control of capital and you believe in individual freedom, you know, you're a liberty. You're a liberal. Those are liberalizing influence historically in history. And if you believe in control, and if you believe in a police state, and if you believe in, you know, taking higher and higher amounts of taxes to do things for people, and if you believe in creating a government monolith to address problems, you are a conservative. Those are the conservatives. So in my view, that's the biggest problem. And you know, people have told me don't say that because it's too confusing. Don't go out and speak and say that. But it's we have to have a paradigm shift in terms of what we think we are as a movement and as a people and what we believe and what kind of citizens we are and want to be and what kind of country this is and what we want it to be and how we're going to get it there by asking what it is that we want. And those are not questions that you can answer very, very quickly. And then we, as I said, have to go on about the task of putting meat on those bones philosophically and then specifically. And it's complicated and it takes study and it takes people who are academics to work on it because you've got to pull the strings together and build on the things that came before. So you have to know if you're going to design a philosophy what its history is and why it will work and why it won't work or why you're saying it. And then you can start going to the process of building a political movement that teaches people both the philosophy and is able to teach them so that they can be conversant with the philosophy, so that they can tell others, but really teaches people how to organize. And I don't want to criticize the Tea Party too much, but the Tea Party never matured in terms of teaching people how to organize their precincts to get out the vote and get contributions. It taught people about the Constitution and became a cult of personality. And we're seeing now how the establishment co-opted the Tea Party because they really didn't know what they were about. They just knew that they wanted to do something with the Constitution, and it was about the Tea Party when they threw the tea in Boston Harbor, and it kind of fell apart after that. If there's going to be a new conservative movement, and there may not be. If there's going to be a new right-wing movement or a new left-wing movement, I don't know. If there isn't enough discipline by the rank and file, there won't be enough discipline among the leadership. And there won't be competence in the leadership. And they will make mistakes and they will be co-opted because they don't know any better. The lessons that we need to learn about teaching people how to organize, about building political parties, about building political organization, those are things that were lost on a lot of these people at Tea Party meetings because they thought if we'll just make some calls and do some door knocking, that's enough. That's not organizing. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. So then I guess it's fair that people should say, well, then what is it that you believe? And I've said this before, and I'll keep saying it because I think it's really important. I have come to the conclusion that the federal government in the United States is too powerful. And I think it needs to be permanently, that a lot of power needs to be permanently removed from the equation for the federal government in the United States. And I also think state and local governments are too powerful. So the idea of secession and, annulment and everything else isn't going to be effective because you can't trust your state and local governments either. And so along the same lines, state and local governments have to be pared back substantially. In the town where I live, there was a meeting just recently where the townspeople demanded that the city shovel the sidewalks because they're not able to. That's kind of what you're dealing with. And then there are powers that specifically must be permanently taken from government, and particularly the federal government. And one of them is deficit spending and the power to control the economy and the power to regulate every nook and cranny of what we do. And the power to borrow money, as I said. I think the currency has been debased, and I think this is the moral decay of our country and our society, perhaps the world, especially when you consider central banks printing money. And the debasement of the currency is what is create a subconscious moral decay in the world. If you want righteous people, then you have to have righteous money, and you cannot have righteous money when you have fiat powers devolved into these boards like the Federal Reserve or the Met Council, if you live in Minneapolis and St. Paul, meaning these suzerain boards or boards of suzerains that decide whether there's going to be roundabouts or whether you're going to have this kind of sidewalk in your town. That's what I'm talking about. I think those kinds of powers have to be permanently removed from government because what has happened is government involvement in our personal lives has reached a point where we feel watched and controlled. We've got a debased currency. We feel that we don't have any power. We are frustrated. We are angry. Some people are rioting because of that. Some people are going to the redoubt because of that. Some people are turning to religion because of that. Those things all weaken the spirit of the nation because taking the power back is not easy for many reasons, not the least of which is we have to be worthy of it. We have to be good enough. We have to be strong enough. We have to be smart enough to take back the power. What do you mean, Bob Davis, you have to be stronger? What is weakness? And again, don't answer the question. Just ruminate on it. Weakness is wanting someone else to lead. Weakness is wanting someone else to do the work. These are thought starters. Weakness is wanting a simple explanation. Weakness is demanding our view be considered above all others. We want our view to be the top view. Weakness is throwing up our hands and blaming the media or the politicians in Washington when our movement does not appear to be strong enough. The political system in the United States is failing its people. And we cannot fix it if we don't know what we believe in. We can't fix it if we won't do the work. We can't fix it if we think a personality or a single creed is enough. If we want Donald Trump to have the argument for us, then we are never going to fix the political system. You know, I was appalled by what I saw on the primary campaign trail. I am appalled by the primary system as a setting up essentially a runoff election for the presidency. I am appalled by the amount of power that's been pooled in the executive branch. We are so close to them simply removing the Electoral College, popularly electing a president, and having our Perones or our Chavez as leaders that cannot be removed. We are very close to that. So the task is enormous on both sides. We have to overcome great deals of money and long-term organization, which is designed to maintain control. We need substantially stronger movements to move the needle. What's happened is that there were some movements in this election season that looked like they were going to overcome the establishment, but they didn't because the establishment, at least on the Republican side, but really on both sides, joined forces with the existing candidate and was able to overpower the people that thought they were going to sweep aside the establishment power and basically get rid of them. So we have to have a much, much stronger movement. And on the Republican side, we're going to have a much, much stronger movement because they've changed the rules that affect grassroots leadership. So the same thing that's done on the left was done on the right. And so the individuals are going to have to work so much harder to develop a campaign or a movement that is strong enough to actually win. And, you know, making a few calls and knocking on doors and supporting a candidate with a sign that you drive around in a trailer, or, you know, put up a billboard, or shouting at people, or having meetings where you only talk to your friends, is not a movement. That's just a bowling club. So this is a much bigger thing than that kind of stuff. Because you've got to take over the party, then you've got to take over party leadership, you've got to take over the state house, you've got to take over the governor's mansion, you've got to throw the establishment people out permanently, and you have to be able to maintain the movement through generations. So I don't know if people are up to it. I think there's a lot of people on the right who are older, and they don't know how to educate their children who are adults, 40s and 50s, and those people don't know how to educate their children who are in their 20s, who are now having children who are going to be babies. So this is a generational struggle, and it hasn't even begun yet. So the next question, of course, is finally, can we do it? Well, I don't know. I don't know if we can do it. And will we do it? And I don't know if I know the answer to that question. I certainly am not going to try to answer it in this podcast. But I'm not going to sit here and complain about Donald Trump for the next, you know, 2.5 years. And I'm not going to sit here and defend Donald Trump for the next 4 or 5 years. And I'm not going to sit here and attack Hillary Clinton for the next 4 years. That is a dead end. It's time to start talking about, it's time to look, say, this is a bust. Let's scuttle it and start talking about what is next. Complaining on Facebook and Twitter isn't going to do anything but add to the noise. Going through Hillary Clinton's sins as a human being is not going to do anything but add to the noise. Complaining about Donald Trump is not going to do anything but add to the noise. So it's up to each and every one of us to look beyond this moment and start thinking about what comes next. You know, I just realized that I mentioned something called annulment. And I was talking about nullification, the concept that states can nullify federal law, which really has never been tested. We came close to it during the Jackson administration, but he demurred. So there's never been a constitutional test of nullification. There certainly has for secession. But I needed to correct that right away because people will think I'm an idiot. And of course, something that's historic is also in history. So I guess that was redundant as well. But when you're just kind of going, these things happen. Anyway, some stuff to think about when it comes to the future and the future of political movements in this country in the post-2016 period. Thanks once again to Brush Studio for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. Again, if you want to contact Brush Studio for a client appreciation event, they've got 22 brands of beer and a great wine collection, and it's a great time. You can either visit them at brushstudio.net or call them at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. And thanks to Ryan Plumbing as well. As Greg Ryan says, forget about summer NAC checks. It's all about the fact that the climate is going to change. Winter is coming. I hate to say it, but after the state fair, we start the descent. And you're going to want your heat to work, and you're going to want to have it checked. And while they're at it, talk about high efficiency heating. If you can do it, you can save a lot of money. 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you call 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, that means the suburbs too. Check them out at ryanplumbing.com. Now, pilots, listen up. You want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, and Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. They are the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast all these many months. I love the guys at Alpha Systems. They're the ones that made me understand this is the biggest problem in general aviation. It's all about lift. And when pilots turn on that final approach to land, sometimes they lose lift and they think they can feel it. But with a visual indicator of the amount of lift, the angle of attack that you have, you can safely do an approach, and you don't have to worry about losing lift and thus spinning out or having other kinds of problems that will end your life. It's really a problem in general aviation, and Alpha Systems started the AOA revolution in general aviation. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcasts.com. All right. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. Thanks for checking out the audio stream, the streaming broadcast live live audio at thebobdavispodcast.com. If you're listening on a device, it will not start by itself. If you just hit play on the player, which is in bright red at either the bottom or the top of the page, depending on the device that you have, it'll start playing, and it sounds great. I'm super excited. It plays the last three podcasts, and then you can select other podcasts if you want. Let me know how that works for you. Thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 539.